Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and happy New Year's or Kwanzaa or whatever it is that one celebrates on this particular occasion. The final day of the year, in this case, the final day of 2014. I'm Ron Edwards. This is the Don and Ron Show. Co-host Don Allen will not be with us this evening. He's taking care of some New Year's Eve responsibilities and duties, if you will. So it will be my responsibility to complete, quote-unquote, the 2014 season for the Donnie Ronnie program as we move into 2015. And the projections, the forecast, and some reflections back on the year 2014, which has been a most interesting year. In some regards, it has been a tragic year, if you will. The aviation industry has suffered some serious setbacks as it pertains to the confidence of people that there are still inabilities by the aviation industry to know all of the dangers that are in the skies, if you will, and we are certainly making reference to Flight 8501, an Indonesian regional airline, which the aircraft has apparently been found. At least 7 or 8 bodies have been recovered, 162 souls aboard that aircraft. It'll be going on 4 days now when that aircraft, after apparently, because we don't have all the facts, hit a pattern of severe weather in that part of the world, there between Indonesia and the city-state of Singapore. That aircraft going into the ocean, according to everything that is being conveyed to the public, if you will, and particularly our condolences certainly have to go out to the many families of the 162 souls on that aircraft. And unfortunately, regrettably, if you will, a large number of children, one baby. This is the fourth major airlines catastrophe, if you will, in this 2014 year. And so, you know, what can one say other than we are not the scientific perfectionists that we like to think that we are. One continuing to find out that Mother Nature still controls all aspects, be it on the sea, under the sea, on land, if you will, or in the air, if you will. You know, when you talk in terms of thunderstorms and et cetera, you used to hear that you could climb above the storms, if you will. If we find out in that part of the world that you have thunder caps as high as 50,000 feet. And with regards to commercial aircraft, their maximum is about 38,000 to maybe 40,000 at best. And then you really begin to have the discomfort that is accorded to, quote-unquote, passengers on these aircraft, about 38,000 to 40,000 feet. Now, when you talk in terms of the super spy planes and et cetera, some can go as high as 75,000, if you will. But you're talking about pilots who are in special suits, if you will, to deal with the pressure, the compression, if you will, and all the other problems that go with the lack of oxygen. And then also you're talking about aircraft like the U-2 spy planes and other super secret aircraft that are specifically constructed to be able to deal with aviation and travel at that particular level. And of course, we're not even talking in terms of the space probes and et cetera that were so much a part of the American scientific history, if you will, though clearly we're still waiting to be able to get back on the moon after almost 50 years. That kind of tells you something, that the human species is not really able to deal with the complexities of going beyond, quote-unquote, our natural flow of activity. Flow of activity meaning to be able to be in a situation in which we are safe. So 2014 has been a rather interesting year, a collapse of the relationship between the United States and Russia earlier in the year, the whole thing with the Crimea, if you will, Vladimir Putin proving to be a master, if you will, at the game of political chess, if you will, his actions in the Ukraine, even though we're being told now that Russia is suffering the backlash of sanctions and et cetera against the nuclear armed and capable Soviet Union or Russian Federated Republic, as they are now referred to. The fact of the matter is that they are still formidable. And if, in fact, aggravated or agitated, if you will, could create problems that would threaten, quote unquote, the future survival of this planet that we're on. And so we watch that. But for the purposes of our program tonight, our year-end program 2014, we take a look at a question that is not being talked about and is not being even asked in a manner that it should be, and that is, what does the remaining 2 years of President Barack Obama's administration and legacy hold? And with the Republicans having, in November of this year, won control of the Senate, now controlling both houses of the Congress, if you will, it is quite obvious that the Republicans have no intention of allowing a couple of things. Number one, allowing President Barack Obama to govern, if you will, to move his agenda and the agenda of a majority of the American people who voted for him in 2012 for a second term, if you will. Secondly, his legacy. You know, this president, first African-American, if you will, to obtain that position of power and authority and et cetera, hoping to leave a legacy as it pertains to his presidency. The Republicans, the extreme conservative right, have fought him, and really effectively. I mean, I hate to say it as an African-American, but we must give credence to the devil, if you will. And the Republicans have fought effectively against the administration and the plans of President Barack Obama. They have basically hamstrung him, if you will. They have basically attempted to cut him off at the knees. There have been issues such as the whole thing of health care, if you will, and some other items. But for Black America, there are serious questions. As we move into 2015, the last two, quote-unquote, official years of the presidency of Barack Obama, if, in fact, he has been able to do anything and approach anything which has allowed for not only a sense but a, quote-unquote, proof that the African-American community, the African-American voters, if you will, that our expectations, our visions, our dreams, because we'll be moving into in a couple hours, we'll be moving into January and, quote-unquote, Martin Luther King and African-American history in February and et cetera. And so we'll hear a lot of expressions about dreams, if you will, the legacies, if you will, and et cetera. The Republicans will take control of the Congress of the United States in its entirety. They have clearly indicated they do not intend to yield on many political issues as it pertains to the governance of this nation under the so-called Three Joint Powers Act, the executive, the legislative, and the judiciary, if you will. And in light of the revelations that have come out in the last 4 days about the number three person in the United States House of Representatives, the gentleman from Louisiana, the man who has clearly been identified, though damage control has been in full swing, not only from Fox Network, but really from CNN and others, with the exception of MSNBC, it seems that the white networks and channels have done everything they could to minimize the actions and conduct of the majority whip in the United States House of Representatives. a man who, it was discovered in 2002 in a five-star hotel in downtown New Orleans, met and spoke on the issue of civil rights. That whole BS about that he was there to talk about taxation and how to reduce the burden of the rich paying their fair share and et cetera is not correct documentation. That's one of the things about this era of cyber, if you will, just too much documentation hidden in the archives, if you will, of cyber. And now videos and documents and copies of documents are emerging, such as the agenda of that meeting at that hotel in New Orleans in 2002, where it was really being sponsored by Euro. Euro, a group formed by neo-Nazi factions in the United States, talking in terms that America, this is interesting too, that America is in fact a European enclave settled by Europeans, bringing a certain degree of civility, civilization, and et cetera, to a savage land, if you will. And that as an outgrowth of that, the European, quote-unquote, in other words, white folks, lay absolute claim, quote-unquote, to all aspects of the development of the United States of America. Well, that was a part of what the representative from, at that time, he was a state representative from the district just outside of New Orleans. He is now the congressman for the 1st Congressional District of Louisiana, which borders New Orleans. In fact, the little towns that he represents are some of those cities who actually pushed and in some cases killed African Americans after Hurricane Katrina, for those that want to pretend that they have forgotten the savagery of how white surrounding communities dealt with African Americans who were trying to flee to safety after Hurricane Katrina. Another one of those historical events which placed a serious blot, if you will, on the history and the legacy of America and race and et cetera. I can still see the vivid pictures of then-President George Bush flying over the flooded city of New Orleans, looking down on a significant number, the majority being African Americans, on top of the rooftops of houses and buildings, some in boats, others wading, drowning, if you will, in the overrun levees and dikes and et cetera. And I can well remember kind of an expression of indifference on the face of the president at that time, if you will. But, of course, once again, America dealt with that in such a way as to make it appear that, you know, no damage done, if you will. Now it is something that is not even spoken of, if you will. It is not to be discussed until this situation about 4 days ago. By the way, the reporter working with a blogger uncovered the documentation, the photographs, the videos of the meeting at the hotel in New Orleans in 2002, dealing with the neo-Nazi group under the leadership, the able leadership of the legendary neo-Nazi operative David Duke, if you will, a man who we're also told that we really shouldn't, you know, talk about it as necessary to make reference to David Duke, one of the great disciples of the doctrine of America's version of Adolf Hitler, if you will. And so when it was revealed that the good congressman, Majority Whip, you have to understand that this places him as the number three person in the United States House of Representatives, making him one of the most powerful Americans in the United States, if you will, a man that actually is in the line of succession if some catastrophe was to happen and the president and vice president were to be incapacitated, if you will, and then the Speaker of the House, if you will, and the Vice Speaker, and then the Majority Whip, if you will, the gentleman from the 1st congressional district of Louisiana would become, quote-unquote, President Pro Tem, if you will, acting president of the United States of America. And so it's been interesting in the last couple of days, as every attempt has been made to downplay. In fact, I watched the representative yesterday invoke his religion, saying that he's a good Catholic, that what the Nazis, neo-Nazis stood for, what they were speaking about, and et cetera, was contrary to his beliefs, his doctrine, if you will, of Catholicism, if you will, and et cetera. And I guess that some historians must not have a real solid recollection, remembrance, and review of, quote-unquote, the great religious wars that were fought in Europe over a period of 200 or 300 or 400 or 500 years, if you will, the brutality of those wars and conflicts, if you will. But what is troubling is the initial excuse used by the congressman from the 1st Congressional District in Louisiana, that in 2002 he didn't realize who he was talking to. He allegedly only came for 15 minutes, he said, if you will. There are videos now on social media which indicates that he was there much longer. Also his, and remember again, at that particular time in 2002, he was a member of the Louisiana House of Representatives, later, a couple years later, to achieve a federal seat, again from the 1st Congressional District, if you will, of Louisiana. But his communications director was a personal friend of Dave Duke's. And in fact, it was through the congressman's, or at that time, state representative's communications director, that he accepted gladly the invitation to address the Eurogroup, quote unquote, the founders of white supremacy, and et cetera. In fact, we well remember that year 2002 because that was a point in time when right-wing extremist groups were involved in some very serious training as well as terrorist activities. You know, you never hear white supremacists referred to by the American white media as terrorists, if you will, and et cetera. They can always find all kinds of other groups to be identified as terrorists, but they never call their own or themselves terrorists, if you will. But in 2002, there were a number of high-profile incidents in the United States in which persons of color, primarily African Americans, either disappeared, were slain, if you will, gunned down, and et cetera. And I'll never forget when it was discovered that the ATF had been infiltrated by a rather troubling number of neo-Nazi sympathizers, and actually they were in training. This is for those of you that have your computers at your fingertips. You can call the information up, ATF Tennessee, neo-Nazi operations, if you will, where they had survivalist camps, as they called them, there in Tennessee. But they had them in other places across the United States. In fact, we had a survivalist camp here in Minnesota, where we are, this broadcast is originating from. Survivalist camps, which actually were, quote-unquote, run by neo-Nazi and extreme right-wing groups, if you will. We can well remember some incidents in up around Cameron, Missouri, and et cetera, where a couple of African Americans in the early 1990s disappeared. Later, bodies were found, used as target practice, if you will, by neo-Nazi extremists. So we go to Tennessee, 2002. The Inspector General of the Treasury Department is called upon to investigate the ATF and other federal law enforcement entities, and these survivalist camps are exposed, if you will. They are discovered, if you will. It becomes embarrassment to the federal government, if you will, to the Bush administration at that time, to again 2002. Then people began to go back a decade, if you will, all the way back to 1992. Then they go back another 10 years to 1982 and et cetera. And that's when people like David Duke and those that he preceded, if you will, began to emerge And then we started going back into the 1960s when African-American churches were being bombed, little girls were being killed, African-American civil rights activists were being gunned down outside of their homes, their churches, their houses, and et cetera, were being blown up. There were also white victims, if you will, who had joined with the civil rights movement of the South. Valda Luzzo is one that comes to mind, gunned down on a highway by a federal informant, a certified confidential informant, who was being managed, quote-unquote, by the FBI, who told his handlers that there was going to be a violent confrontation with a white woman who had come down from Detroit, if I'm not mistaken, the city in which she resided in prior to her death. Viola was gunned down on a highway there in, what was it, northern Alabama, if you will. It took about 10 years and finally an admission by the FBI and other federal agencies that the key gunman, the man that actually fired from an automobile that pulled parallel to Ms. LaRusso's automobile, opening fire, killing her instantly, was in fact, as we said just minutes ago, a certified confidential informant who had been working for the FBI for over a decade, had been involved, later this was found out, had been involved in the killing of five or six African Americans over a period of about a decade or so. Rationale always being that the continued secrecy of this individual's role was for the good of the country. I think that meant for the good of the white country, if you will, the white nation. The pain and sorrow felt by African Americans, be damned, if you will. And so these kinds of things were happening. And so when the ATF's operation working with neo-Nazi fanatics in Tennessee was unveiled, some other pieces began to come into play. And we have talked about for over a decade the very sophisticated and very dangerous operation in the what they call the reverse boot of Idaho. We've talked about it before. We know that some have gone out. We know that some have checked it out, quote unquote. It's way up in the northern part of Idaho, if you will, probably maybe 105 miles from the Canadian border. It's called Sandpoint, Idaho, if you will, and there's a very interesting area in close proximity. It's called the Priest Basin, if you will. Beautiful lake up there in the mountains, Priest Lake, Priest River, and et cetera. In fact, unfortunately, people who were on their way to Spokane, Washington, if you will, which is about probably 115, 120 miles south of Sandpoint, Idaho. The Sandpoint, nice tourist type of town, if you will. Black folk not really welcomed, if you will, if you know what I'm saying. Back in the late 1980s, early 90s, four or five young African Americans disappeared up around that area, if you will. Kind of difficult there. It was kind of difficult in some respects to get clarity on what happened to them. The sheriff up there in that county, Sandpoint, going towards Bonner's fray, if you will, always maintained that Negroes must have got lost in their cars or et cetera. At least two bodies were found in the 1980s. Again, reference for those that like to play with their computers, Sandpoint, Priest River, Priest Lake, if you will. A hell of a training ground for quote-unquote insurgent operations or insurgencies, if you will, is still a significant focal point. It is, in fact, in Sandpoint, Idaho, that the planning for the bombing of the Martin Luther King Jr. activities in, what was it, 2010, in which a very sophisticated bomb put together by a demolitions expert who had been posted at Fort Lewis, Washington, which is on the other side of the state of Washington, if you will, had put together a bomb. If that bomb would have detonated on that occasion of the celebration of Martin Luther King Day, at least if 1,700 to 2,000 marchers and participators in the celebration of the life and the legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. would have died. This was an interesting bomb, by the way. It was both a biological, quote-unquote, and kind of chemical bomb, if you will, very powerful bomb. What happened was it was left in a satchel under a bus stop. Luckily for everybody concerned, and particularly the city of Spokane, Washington, if you will, two city workers very alertly saw it, called the police, knew that this was the route for the Martin Luther King Day celebration, if you will. There would be 1,500 to 1,700 marchers, if you will, celebrating, again, the life and the legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. Anyways, bomb squad got there, were able to defuse it. The design of the bomb and certain materials in the bomb led federal authorities, including the ATF, Alcohol, Tax, and Firearms Division, FBI, to contact the United States military and indicate that some of the materials in the bomb, particularly the switch that was used to, that would have been used to detonate the bomb would have been, was going to be detonated by radio, quote-unquote, signal, was equipment that was could only be utilized or found under the custody and control of the United States military. That took them immediately back to Fort Lewis, Washington, if you will. Within a couple months, it was determined that an individual who had, and it's always, it goes like this, that individual who had been under surveillance and observation, but who had allegedly left the service, if you will, was a person who that seemed to be his signature, what we call signature on the bomb, if you will. He was identified as a person who had become a mountain man, whatever the hell that, well, we know what that means, and that he was operating in and around a place called Wilbur, Washington, for those of you that like to go check and take a look at things. Wilbur, probably 135, 140 miles west on Route 2, if you will. For those of you that know Washington State, know the Spokane area, know that rugged mountain up there, the so-called near the Colville Indian Reservation, if you will, around Lake Roosevelt National Recreational Park, and then to the south there is Wilbur, Washington, if you will. Old Mountain Man apparently was operating out and around there. The authorities picked him up. He almost had what was pretty much a secret trial. Wasn't a lot of written about it. CNN, Fox News, none of the others even dealt with it. There was some concern that some actions was being directed against a small black population in Moses Lake, Washington. For those of you that are familiar with, again, that part of the world, if you will, Moses Lake, a little enclave town of about 9,000, 10,000. It always had a fairly nice-sized Negro population, if you will. Moses Lake, for those of you, again, traveling, is on Highway 90, if you will, again. All of this is important when you talk in terms of the role, quote-unquote, of the number three man in the United States Congress as of this hour, as we speak. His knowledge, his role, his understanding, particularly when he was positioned in 1996 to begin to be involved in politics in Louisiana, but prior to that he had apparently been involved in some of these survivalist camps, if you will, had received his training, if you will, understood his mission. He was put on the fast track, Scully, if you will, Representative Scully of Scully, was put on the fast track, if you will, moved rapidly up through the Louisiana House, if you will, Louisiana local political situation, and as we said, by 2006, was in Washington, and within about, 4 years, 4.5 years, 5 years, became the assistant majority whip, if you will, and then the majority whip, again, making him the number three person in the House of Representatives. As we said before, some of the information now being displayed by left-wing bloggers around the country, raising serious questions about the lies that the majority whip told in the first 2 days, 48 hours of the revelation and the unveiling of the videos and etc., that he didn't know who he was talking to, did not have any idea. Somebody had suggested to him that there was a big conference going on. In fact, I'll tell you how bad this situation is. On a couple of websites right now on the left, is that at that particular time there was New Orleans has a minor league baseball team, and a team from outside of New Orleans. In fact, I think they were coming in from Fort Worth, Texas, and they had a couple black ball players. Sounded like something out of the movie 42, which was the movie about Jackie Robinson and integrating Major League Baseball. Of course, this was 50 years later. But anyways, there was concern by the hotel that it would not be wise to have this white baseball team with a couple of black players stay at the hotel because of the presence of so many dangerous neo-Nazi operatives, some of whom, by the way, in this 2002 activity, and by the way, video shows some of them sitting in the meeting while the number two man in the United States Congress was addressing the group in their neo-Nazi uniforms, in their Gestapo, if you will, with their SS death head insignias and et cetera. So I don't know who the congressman thought he was looking at sitting in the audience. And contrary to what the good congressman said, he was not there to talk about taxes. He was there to talk about the Negro problem, if you will. Now, that takes us to the plan that's afoot, if you will, as we go into the last 25 minutes of tonight's program. Again, my co-host Don Allen is on kind of assignment, if you will, preparing for activities later on this evening, this being, of course, New Year's Eve, if you will. But what is now basically being said is that there was just not an understanding of who it was that these people were. Again, the congressman yesterday revised, notice we use the word revised, his initial declarations that he did not even speak. See, initially he said he didn't speak until left-wing bloggers 3 days ago printed the the agenda for the meeting. And, of course, there was the congressman's name, as we said before, for the purposes of transparency and clarity and et cetera. He was a state representative at that particular time, representing communities in and around New Orleans, particularly like Gatlin, across the river from New Orleans, and et cetera, you know, those enclaves that, well, rejected, you know, to the extent of the loss of life of African Americans attempting to flee the flooding in New Orleans, if you will, the Crescent City, if you will. And so after being confronted with the videos and the crowd that he, the now congressman, number three man, we want to just keep repeating that because we know that just upsets some folks. You know, why don't this Negro get the hell off of this? You know, we don't, you know, so what? What does it mean? Well, it means a lot when you take a look at what happened after that meeting in 2002. And it means a lot to the meetings that have been going on, actually, since the 20th of January 2009, which, by the way, was also the occasion of the inauguration of the first African-American president of the United States of America. And the clear plan and very effective action of the extreme right to make it almost impossible for Barack Obama to govern in this country, if you will. And so here's the plan. As we said, we have just returned from Missouri, just returned from areas in and about St. Louis and Berkeley, by the way, where another young African-American by the name of Antonio Martin gunned down after allegedly pulling a gun, another one of those guns that can't be found, if you will, kind of like in the case of young Myers, who was shot and killed, shot 11, 12, 13, 14 times. You don't even keep count. Young Mr. Myers was killed after Mr. Powell, who was killed after Mr. Brown, if you will, all within a triangle of probably 10 miles, if you will, there in St. Louis County and St. Louis City, if you will. But after the shooting of Antonio Martin, though they didn't give you a lot of publicity and et cetera, there were serious disturbances. A very large number of law enforcement had to be called out, if you will, from surrounding communities. The Missouri Highway Patrol and National Guard units, which are still, quote unquote, deployed in St. Louis County. You see, they don't talk about that, and Governor Jay Nixon doesn't want them to talk about that there are still primarily and prominently white military units of the Missouri National Guard still deployed in and around St. Louis City, St. Louis County, Berkeley, Missouri, Ferguson, Missouri, and other towns. Antonio Martin, another young African-American, martyred, if you will, gunned down, and et cetera. But as has been said, that every 28 hours or 28 minutes, certainly not 28 days, in America, a African-American, 28 minutes, by the way, an African-American is gunned down, if you will, by the authorities in this country. In fact, the FBI and others can't even get the statistical data correct on just how many young African-Americans and others of color, if you will, because if you're a Native American out in a place like Seattle, Washington, if you will, Bellingham, and et cetera, you know, you find that your young red brothers are oftentimes far too frequently the victims of police misconduct and et cetera. It's one of the reasons why the Department of Justice imposed certain conditions, such as what was imposed here in our beloved Minneapolis in 2008, in 2004 to 2008, over the Minneapolis Police Department. But Seattle, obtained and achieved a reputation of really having no regard for Native American life in that city, which, you know, Seattle's supposed to be even more liberal than Minneapolis. I mean, my God, there's no place in the free white world that is more liberal than than Minneapolis and St. Paul. I mean, you can ask all kinds of victims, if you will, T.T. Franklin, if you will, Sales for Ron Scott, if you will, and others about, you know, just how liberal we are here in the upper Midwest. Well, Seattle at one point was considered to be even more liberal as it pertains to race relations and et cetera. Well, an examination by the Department of Justice under Eric Holder, and God help us, as a part of the plan that is now afoot, and that plan will be shepherded by, quote unquote, the number three man in the United States House of Representatives, the representative from the 1st Congressional District of Louisiana, who will, quote unquote, be the floor manager. If you, in fact, the representative will be the floor manager and has been very much involved in the in-depth conversations about when will be the right time to move a articles of impeachment against President Barack Obama. Oh, you see, they don't want y'all to think about that and to talk about it, and that's why there has been so much damage control over the last 4 days with regards to what has happened, because the good congressman from Louisiana was to be the point man. He was to be one of the managers who would step forward. That's the term that is used. For those of you that need to research it, go research the procedures, policies, and protocol of the House of Representatives and then the Senate in a situation in which articles of impeachment are, quote-unquote, presented against a sitting president. And what was expected was that enough of a rancoredness between the White House and the white Congress would be in play by the middle part of the summer of 2015, that this would be a significant leverage, if you will, for whoever the standard bearer would be for the Republican endorsement, which would not take place for another 5 to 6 months. They do not want any discussion about the issue of impeachment because they need to move the necessary agenda. When I say they, I'm talking about the extreme right, if you will, in this country, who are absolutely dedicated. In fact, they're beyond dedication. They are fanatical about the fact that they will do everything they can, even though he only has 2 years left, to destroy Barack Obama and to, quote unquote, set in place the right mindset for African Americans and liberals in this country who may make the mistake of thinking that the election of an African American to the presidency of the United States can be an occasion which should happen every 12 years or thereabouts, if you will. And so there's been a lot of discussion and planning. And over the last 7 days in the St. Louis area, groups who know they're under surveillance of African Americans and others have come together because documentation, as was done many, many, many years ago, during the height of the civil rights struggle in the 1960s, which shows working papers, if you will, documents which indicate how the Negro problem will be handled in America in the years 2015-2016, setting the stage and setting conditions which will make it extremely easy for whoever the Republican standard bearer is to win the election of 2016 and to take control of the White House. The assumption being at this particular point that the Republicans in the election of 2016 will be able to hold their seats in both the House and the Senate, though it'll be a little bit tougher because there are more so-called blue states that are up. But the new doctrine that is getting ready to come forward, Rush Limbaugh and others have agreed to full participation. And actually, subliminally, it is being conditioned into your mind, and that is the issue of law and order. And unfortunately, this has really renewed itself after the tragic ambush and assassination of two New York officers of color. See, people tend to forget that, of course, all life is valuable. We understand that, though, clearly, when African Americans prior to the assassinations an ambush in New York, we're talking about life was valuable. No one was, quote-unquote, concurring with us, quote-unquote, as the African-American community, the sons and daughters of the African. So consequently, folks have stayed away from the fact that both of the New York police officers who were slain were officers of color, one Asian, one Latino, Hispanic, if you will. And so they kind of want to stay away from that. But in the meanwhile, the discussion has begun in powerful circles, the cable channels, if you will, newspaper editorials, and et cetera, that we are close to perilously. In fact, they use that word, perilously close to the need of law and order. Now, let me give you a little bit of history about law and order. Law and order is not new in this country. Law and order goes all the way back to the draft wars in New York City during the height of the Civil War, when a whole lot of newly arriving immigrants were being told that they would have to, quote-unquote, register for the draft. They love coming to America from Ireland and Germany and Hungary and Poland and Italy, particularly Italy, Spain, and et cetera, France. But they weren't prepared to go to war or die. In fact, they started talking about it was a rich man's conflict, if you will, that was going on. And that also they did not understand the need to free the Negroes, if you will, as a part of the Civil War from the 1860 to 1865. You see, again, the importance of your history. As we have oftentimes said, one of the problems we have here in Minnesota is that we had almost $3 million. Well, we did. It was over $3 million was raised and allocated for the creation and opening of a African-American history museum. Never happened, never will happen, by the way. That's most regrettable because we need that history. We need to be able to incorporate both local history, national history, and even international history because we need to get a better understanding of the politics that was so much in support of the issue of slavery, quote-unquote, from the period of the 1400s to, quote-unquote, even now in some regards, so certainly to the so-called period of the 1880s and et cetera. So all of this is important to the current discussions that are going on about the rupturing of the ability of the Obama administration to get anything done. Let me give you a couple of examples. One of the most important nominations that President Obama has made, of course, is the person to succeed Eric Holder as Attorney General. The conservative extremists, particularly enhanced by the presence of neo-Nazis, if you will, who basically call themselves Tea Partiers, that it is important to maintain as much chaos as possible within the Department of Justice so that it is more difficult to deal with, quote-unquote, the emergence, once again, of law and order. Now, it is 1964. A very radical, extremist, white man, senator from Arizona named Barry Goldwater, is being touted to be the standard bearer in the election of 1964. The country is still reeling from the assassination of Camelot, if you will, in other words, Kennedy, if you will, within 4 more years, Martin Luther King Jr. would be dead, Bobby Kennedy would be dead, Medgar Evers and others would be dead. And the beginning of the breaking of the back of the civil rights movement was in full sway, if you will. But 1964, Barry Goldwater, who actually thought as a senior senator from the state of Arizona, actually thought that he had the necessary power using the race card to enhance his chance to become president of the United States. Luckily for many of us, though, as an outgrowth of the intensity of racism in the United States in 1963 and 1964, the election of 1964 was one of the most volatile in modern times until, quote-unquote, the elections in 2008, to a lesser degree in 2012. Barry Goldwater, though, caught the attention until even a significant number of white Americans began to say, this man is a little bit too much. It was also a time when the United States knew that they were getting ready and had already made a commitment to a place called Vietnam, formerly Indochina in Southeast Asia, and that they would need the Negro, quote-unquote, to be a part of the sacrifice of America's sons and daughters of fighting a war with people who hadn't done anything nor represented any threat to the United States of America. J. Edgar Hoover, then the executive head of the, or director as he called himself, of the FBI, came in with a plan. If it had not been for, quote-unquote, the tenaciousness and the courage of the congressman from Harlem, Adam Clayton Powell, which is reflected in a book called The Man Who Cried I Am by Robert Williams, if it had not been for Adam Clayton Powell and his only other African-American counterpart in the Congress of the United States. See, a lot of folks don't know that in the 1960s up until 1966-65, I mean, there were only, for 20 years, there were only two Negroes, quote-unquote, African-Americans in the Congress of the United States, starting way back in 1933-34. But if it had not been for Adam Clayton Powell Jr. and him, or he, making available some very confidential documents to a young author by the name of Robert Williams and The Man Who Cried I Am, many in black America and so-called liberal America would not have been aware of the plans that were afoot. But much of this was an outgrowth of Barry Goldwater's declaration that law and order needed to be the order of the day in America, that there was lawlessness in the streets of America, and et cetera, that there were those who were communist sympathizers. See, back in those days, African-American or Negro who spoke up for the race, if you will, was declared as a fellow traveler, i.e. slash communist, if you will. Actually, as J. Edgar Hoover realized through wiretaps and et cetera, that many progressive, young, thinking African-Americans of that particular day had developed a counter-argument. And that counter-argument was that if we were a black nationalist, why in the hell would we listen or embrace the philosophy of a white man called Karl Marx? and a man by the name of Lenin, if you will. And that began in the mid-1960s to resonate with the young Negroes, the young African-Americans on the streets of America, as cities like Newark and Detroit and Cleveland, Los Angeles, if you will, New York City, Washington, D.C., if you will, began to erupt. And then by 65, 66, and 67, Minneapolis, if you will, Omaha, Kansas City, if you will, Atlanta, Georgia, many enclaves, Buffalo, New York, Boston, Massachusetts. And so J. Edgar Hoover said, we got to come up with a different title, a label for these individuals who threaten the very fiber of quote-unquote white supremacy in America. And so they started talking about black militants, and they started identifying Stokely Carmichael and Rap Brown and Angela Davis and others. Great, particularly in the case of Angela Davis, a beautiful and great mind, if you will, intellectually and otherwise, and said, but these people represent something foreign, and they're going to bring all the blacks over from Africa. They're going to take away the jobs. They're going to rape white women. They're going to take advantage, quote-unquote, of America's, you know, generosity, quote-unquote, of tolerance and justice. Keep in mind that word, tolerance and justice. And so many of you out there need to know and understand tonight as we speak, as we move close to the end of 2014 and the beginning of 2015, that we're also moving close to the unveiling of the plan to totally dismantle, if you will, the legacy and the ability to govern of a man by the name of Barack Obama, President of the United States of America. It is frightening because, by and large, we do not have the institutions, if you will. We do not have the necessary reflections that we need in this country to make sure that the debate is properly joined, and that is so important, my friends, that the debate is properly joined, and that we, the sons and daughters of the African, are given the opportunity to raise the necessary questions and have the necessary answers. That's why it is so unfortunate that outgoing Attorney General Eric Holder has decided to step away for whatever the reasons are. But there are black people of power in this country, power in the sense of having the information, having the ability to make sure that it is disseminated, if you will, that people are made aware of what the plan is, because the plan is afoot. And as we said before, the gentleman who holds the position of number three in the United States House of Representatives as Majority Whip is or was going to be the man who would, quote-unquote, be the manager of the articles of impeachment against Barack Obama. See, the strategy already has been put in place that the year 2015 would basically be spent tying up the Obama administration. The year 2016, the election year, would be the year to make reference to the inability, even to the criminality, because that's how close they are. That's a dangerous word, by the way, criminality, to be directed upon and against a sitting president. But in materials and et cetera that have been unveiled, that word will begin to be used. In fact, it has been tested. It's kind of like a marketing product where you're trying to market something, if you will, like acid, if you will, you know, poison, and et cetera. But criminality will become a word that will be more featured over the next number of months. And the plan is afoot. How those of us in Black America accept, take, study, reflect, attempt to bring into full focus what the overall plan is, only time will tell. And this will be, by the way, in conclusion tonight as we move towards 2015, this will be a quote-unquote significant demand upon the African American. Are we prepared to stand tall? Are we prepared to stand tough? Are we prepared to be tough-minded intellectually and otherwise? Are we prepared to raise the necessary question? Are we prepared to develop the foundations, the platforms that will allow us to do that? I am not sure if we can and if we will. It is difficult to say. We have watched closely over the last 4 days the developments in Washington surrounding a man who is clearly the darling of neo-Nazi factions. And for those of you that really don't want to deal with or understand what we're saying. These are people who embrace the doctrine of a madman named Adolf Hitler and all of his cronies and the industrial giants of Germany in that period of the 1930s leading up to the conflicts of 1939, 40, and 41, and etc. And these people are serious, my friends. They are serious. And to my friends up in Sandpoint, Idaho, you understand, we know and watch you as you watch us. We know and understand that you have your program, your plan in place. We know that your commandos, if you will, your special forces are at play, if you will, that up around and in Sandpoint, Idaho, and along the Priest River and in those deep, beautiful valleys up there, if you will, that your survivalist camps are fully engaged, fully prepared. We know that your agents are moving about the country, if you will. We know just what you're doing, if you will. We know how many young African Americans, by and large, that you are executing, if you will, some officially, some unofficially, if you will. We also know of the large number of law enforcement officers that you have orientated, if you will, that you have brought into the fold. We call attention to two specific cases in St. Louis this past summer, which was suppressed as we close, in which individuals clearly indicated and enunciated that as far as they are concerned, that Barack Obama should disappear from the face of the earth and that black people should go with him. These were veteran police officers attached to the St. Louis County Police Department. It was the kind of reflections that was given no overall view, if you will. There was no reflection, if you will. There was no examination, if you will. There was no diagnostic, if you will. The individuals were allowed to, quote-unquote, kind of quietly disappear, make it appear that they were, quote-unquote, leaving law enforcement. They have not. We are very cognizant of where they're at. We're very cognizant of other elements of the neo-Nazi factions that exist across the country. And for those of you that take the time, we gave you a website 6 months ago that this was coming. Maybe next week, upon the return of our co-host and fellow brother, we will talk specifically about a website that spells out clearly what is expected and what will be done over the next 22 months. We appreciate you allowing us to come into your lives, let you have and enjoy a safe 2015. God knows that in Black America we need the hand of the Almighty on our shoulder to make sure that we're able to live a level, if you will, of survival, because these are difficult times for the sons and daughters of the African. God bless you, Black America, and may you continue to stay strong. I'm Ron Edwards. This is the Ron and Don Show.